This is St. Louis Public Radio. Christian's first year as Missouri's Director of Agriculture has not been boring. Her tenure began with flooding in the spring that's now causing delays in crop harvests, along with contamination in southeastern Missouri that triggered a temporary ban of the herbicide dicamba. St. Louis Public Radio's Marshall Griffin caught up with Chin to talk about those challenges and her department's main priorities.
We've had a lot of big issues to deal with, but, you know, we've also been looking at our rule review. Governor Greitens promised that he would reduce the amount of regulations. So here at the Department of Ag, we've been doing a very thorough rule review and evaluating every rule and regulation we have on the books. So that's been keeping all of the staff very busy.
Have there been any rules that have been eliminated yet?
You know, we're still in the process of evaluating all the rules, so it takes some time to get through that. So we are looking at all of our rules and regulations and evaluating them. Then we will present them to decide if we want to get rid of them, if we can get rid of them. So right now we're just still doing our investigative process.
Can the rules just be eliminated through the executive branch? Does the legislature need to sign off on those?
So if they're a statutory requirement, it'll have to go through the legislature to be removed. If it's just a guideline, then that's something that we can take care of here, maybe at the department level. But for every situation, it's going to be different. That's why it's taking us such a long time, because we have to find out, you know, is it statutorily required, or is it just a rule, or is it a guideline? So when you start digging in deep, you realize how many things the Department of Ag actually has a touch on. We touch petroleum, we touch plant industries, we touch animal health. So there's just a lot of rules and regulations, but it's because we want to make sure our farmers and ranchers are protected as well as consumers.
We see what's going on the federal level about efforts at deregulation. Is there any cooperation or any guidance or advice going to or coming from Washington, D.C. to Jefferson City regarding agriculture?
Well, they have a rule review process going on as well right now. You know, USDA has reached out to all their state counterparts asking the same thing that we've been doing here in Missouri. So if there was a rule or a regulation that a state felt was burdensome or no longer necessary, USDA was wanting that feedback as well. So they're just starting their process as well. So these conversations are going to continue to be ongoing.
There was a bill that was passed this year, signed with an emergency clause in time for the spring harvest, so that some new regulations regarding the use of dicamba could be implemented. There were still some issues and problems and a temporary ban. I guess tell us what happened.
So on July the 7th, we issued a temporary stop sale and use order. So we stopped all use of all dicamba products and all sales in the state of Missouri. This was just a temporary pause so that we could regroup. We had over 130 complaints at that time, so we felt like it was very important that we just hit the pause button and try to gather information and recollect our thoughts. 6 days later, on July the 13th, we were able to issue a special local needs label. The manufacturers of the products worked very closely with us to help us, as well as EPA, to make sure that we had a new label that put some safeguards in place so that we could use that product going forward more responsibly. And, you know, the safeguards we put in place was you couldn't spray unless it was between the hours of 9 a.m. And you couldn't start a new tank after 3 p.m. in the afternoon. We said that you couldn't apply in wind speeds above 10 miles per hour. We required record keeping so that anybody who was applying it had to keep some records on them of what they were doing and when they were doing that. And that was just a safeguard for those farmers who were using that product. We also asked that everybody who was going to use that product register with the Department of Agriculture every day, so that we knew when a complaint came in, we could go back and see if anybody was spraying in that area that day. We put all those safeguards in place to try and just get a better understanding for the product and how it worked. And, you know, this year, EPA has made some changes on their own to the label, and they took a lot of our safeguards that we used and incorporated them into that new label. So there's a lot of similarities, but there's some differences as well. So right now at the Department of Agriculture, we're reviewing the new EPA label for those three products, and we're evaluating what information we can get from researchers, from the companies, to see is the new label from EPA going to be enough, or are we going to want to add some additional requirements for the state of Missouri. And we're hoping to have a decision by the end of this week on what direction we think we might want to go for the state of Missouri.
And let me go back to something. You said the application hours were from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Is that right?
Right. So you couldn't start before 9 a.m. and you could not start a new tank after 3 p.m. in the afternoon. So if you were in the field and your tank went empty at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you just had to be done for the day. Just because we were trying to make sure that we didn't have temperature inversions. And we felt like, based off of science from the University of Missouri, those hours of operation were the least likely time when there would be a temperature inversion.
What's happened since then?
Well, when we did our stop, sale, and use order, we saw the number of alleged complaints go down. So we realized that we brought attention to an issue. Maybe people were paying a little bit more attention to that label to make sure they weren't doing something wrong. And so we think that was good. EPA is going to require mandatory education going forward. So we see that as an added benefit because there are so many steps on this label that just missing one step can cause problems. So we feel like it's a very positive direction to go when you ask people to just go through some required training before they use that product.
How's the fall harvest going for different crops around the state?
We're a little bit behind where we normally are, and that was just because we were waiting for the crops to dry down. And then when the crops finally dried down, the rain set in and the ground got too muddy. So we're a little bit behind, but with the equipment that we have today, we will be okay. I don't foresee any problems in getting the crops out. We're about 80% done on corn, 63% done on beans. And, you know, so I think we're doing pretty good. We're close. It is November 1st, but farmers have been in the fields running as hard as they can. I was in the Boot Heel just this week and saw lots of cotton pickers and combines just going as hard as they could. Even through the night hours. So, you know, farmers are working around the clock to get that crop out to make sure that we all have safe food for our families every day.
Was there any damage to any crops from the flooding earlier this year?
You know, when the flooding happened, crops weren't really in the ground yet. So it just mainly delayed the planting. There were a few people that might have had some crops in the ground, but they were able to do replants. And so I think they were going to be okay. It just really delayed them getting started more than anything.
What type of agricultural business opportunities have there been as a result of Governor Greitens' recent trade mission?
The governor did go on a trade mission to China and South Korea. So we were just going to start building relationships and getting to know people and letting them know that, hey, we're open for business. Anything that you were interested in, we would be interested in helping you. And so it was a really good trip. It was mainly just building those relationships and exploring what opportunities might be there for Missouri farmers and ranchers.
Were any deals signed during that trip?
There were no agreements signed that day. Like I said, we were just there to build relationships, to learn what opportunities were there. What we learned is that there's a lot of interest in small and medium-sized enterprises, and that they're very interested in Missouri beef and dairy products, and that there's lots of opportunities for our farmers and ranchers. So we will be trying to explore opportunities moving forward.
Sum up how the state fair went this year and any future plans for doing anything different or new with the Missouri State Fair.
So we had a very successful state fair this year. We had record attendance on the first weekend. People were very excited to be at the fair. The weather was nice, so that helped us as well. We did have one concert that got rained out, which was disappointing for concert goers, but we felt like, you know, public safety was the most important thing. We had over 30,000 livestock exhibits from 4-H and FFA kids, so that was exciting to see their enthusiasm and their interest in agriculture. We did do something new this year with Missouri Farmers Care. We partnered with them in the FFA as well as the Brownfield Network, and we did a Feed More, Drive to Feed Kids campaign. People were able to make monetary donations throughout the entire fair. They were able to bring canned goods to the fair to go to local food banks. But the FFA kids kind of went a step further, and they packed over 52,000 meals within a two-hour period that's going to be distributed all across the state of Missouri for families in need. And so that was an opportunity for those kids to have a service project to give back, but it was also more about raising awareness. One in five Missourians today are food insecure, and so it's really important that people understand that. We want to see that number go down. And when you get to the rural areas, one in three children are food insecure, and hunger is an issue that doesn't have a voice. Nobody brags about being hungry. So it's really important for us to raise awareness, and we're hoping that this is a tradition that we can start and continue in years to come.
Now, speaking of kids involved in agriculture products and 4-H, any concerns about the future of agriculture as far as getting more kids interested in wanting to become farmers, ranchers, Is that something that is a battle?
You know, I think there's more interest than ever in our kids today wanting to come back to the family farm. Technology is moving into agriculture at very fast rates. And there's so many neat opportunities for kids. They've grown up with cell phones in their hands. And so now computers are driven by GPS. They have maps and grids that they can download and they can precision plant. There's lots of opportunities with drones and the precision agriculture and the soil sampling. And these kids, they know how to use all of this equipment. So it's really exciting for them. What we want to do is make sure that the kids, when they get ready to come back after they've gotten their education to that rural community, that they can use those tools. One of our biggest challenges is high-speed internet. Farmers need high-speed internet in rural areas to be able to access this technology, and that's one of our obstacles. So we're working to raise awareness about this issue and try and attract more rural internet providers to address this issue and help people in the rural areas so our kids can come back to the family farms and implement what they've learned when they go to colleges and universities and be able to access that technology to make sure that we can continue to produce safe food for our families.
Any other topics that you want to talk about that we haven't covered yet?
Sure. So I think since the last time we talked, we have launched our strategic initiative for the Department of Agriculture, and it's called the MORE campaign. So everything we do here is going to be based on four pillars of feeding more, connecting more, reaching more, and empowering more. So this year, we're not going to have a governor's conference on agriculture, and instead, we're going to take our team, our division directors, me, my deputy director, and we're going to go straight to the agriculture groups, and we're going to hit their annual meetings so that we can reach out to farmers and ranchers and talk to them and let them know what the Department of Agriculture does for them. But we want to hear feedback from them. What would they like to see at the next governor's conference on agriculture? We want to have their input. And if there are problems that are out there that haven't surfaced to our level of attention, we want to hear from them. And we thought this was the best way for us is to get out and go to the farmers and the ranchers when they're meeting at their annual meetings. We thought it was a great opportunity for them to meet my team and to learn what we can do to them for them to help them in their farms and ranches every day.